Good day, and welcome Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. My name's John, and I'm joined today by Nate. Nate, how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. We've had a wonderful day today so far. A bit chilly out there, but I like it.
It is a little bit cooler today. We were dealing with some humidity and rain yesterday, so it's nice to have a little bit of a break. So you guys had an interesting day yesterday, and so did I, and we'll touch on that in this podcast. This morning I had a little bit of an interesting morning. I don't know if you've heard.
No. You tell what.
So we're supposed to today have a guest on, and Emily Crocker, and she had a show yesterday, so I'm assuming she had a late night getting home and getting set and slept in, which is fine. I totally understand that. I know after shows I'm pretty exhausted, so we'll definitely have her on at a later date, but just not this morning. I set my alarm clock for 6 a.m. this morning to get, you know, set and record the podcast, and it didn't go off. And I woke up to the sound of guinea hens going absolutely crazy. I mean, crazy. And I have the air conditioner in our room, so if I'm hearing them over the air conditioner, there's a problem. So I pop up out of bed, and I look out our bedroom window, and out our bedroom window, you can see the buck pen and the chicken coop. And right outside the chicken coop fence is a fox. And I'm not one to play around with predators on our farm, so I grabbed my rifle and went outside in my boxers and
touched one off.
I eventually touched one off. So I went out there in my boxers, and I couldn't quite see it from the angle I had on the side of the house. So I went around and started coming down the hill towards the chicken coop, and it saw me and ran. So I was like, oh, all right, let me back off. And I just ran to the other side of the house and looked back to see if it was at that side, and it wasn't. So I went back inside, threw on some clothes because nobody needs to be seeing me running around in my boxers at 6 a.m. So I put on some clothes, and I, you know, started, you know, getting some fluids in me, some water, and yeah, the guinea hen started going crazy again. So I knew the fox wasn't too spooked, and I went out to the side of the house again, and was able to touch one off and hit it, and then was able to touch another one off, and it ran. Wasn't able to find it. I went down, and I saw plenty of evidence that it had been hit, and it ran off into the brush. We have really thick brush behind our house, which is why we have so many coyotes and foxes, right, and all that stuff. So then I come back in the house, and my dog doesn't like fireworks. My dog does not like shotguns, any kind of loud bangs, rifles. And so he's, of course, freaking out. So I go to put my gun away, and he goes running into the bathroom right behind me. And then I go and look, and my poor pregnant wife, her eyes are wide open. She's like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "Oh, there was a fox. Sorry." So, yeah, it was an interesting morning here on Scott's Circle.
It sounds it, and you had mentioned last night that to me, that the your Nigerians were going off and crying, yeah, and you were concerned that the younger ones, the sound was very similar to the rabbit call,
yeah,
that they use for calling in foxes and coyotes. And
oh yeah, yeah, our little Nigerian, when she starts screaming, she sounds like she could call every bear and coyote in the county in. So we added a new doe to our herd, which, again, we'll touch on in a second. And I decided to move my Nigerian milkers out of the pen. Well, the kids didn't like that, so they were going crazy. So I had to move them back in. So I'm going to have to figure that out. I really in with the kids right now, especially since we have such a new young one in there. But for the night, I decided it was better to not have to be on patrol. So they went back in with them. But yeah, she's loud when it comes to that. And that's her. As she's always been a loud kid, and she was letting me know she wasn't appreciative of the new situation. So how was your morning and week on your farm?
Well, on our farm, the does are starting to finally come in, but the heat, we feel it's like a week or two too early here in you know, the end of August. We wanted to wait another week so that our kids would be being born in January, not in the middle of January, but rather at the end of January, beginning of February.
Yeah.
But for us, because of family, you know, just family planning as far as, you know, holidays and birthdays and family get-togethers, the end of January works best.
Yeah, don't. And plus you don't want to be milking in the cold. It's cold out in January, especially up there in the Great White North.
Right. And we're not even as far up north as some of our listeners may be.
Yeah, we have some.
But we are in that lake effect. We are in that lake effect belt that hits Syracuse, that makes Syracuse, you know, the snowiest city in the U.S.
Yeah.
So we do get, you know, you'll have a dusting down there on the Hudson, and I'll be knee deep in snow from the same system. So, you know, we try to put it, it sounds crazy that that's the middle of the winter, but for us that's prime because February warms around here starts warming up near the end of the month. And
yeah,
once they've been in the house for a week and then in the kid pen in the back room for another week, we're now that middle of February where it may be very cold or it may be warming up, and make it so we can move them on out to the barn. And then our barn is not that cold. It's usually about, you know, 10 to 15 degrees warmer than the outside air. I mean, most barns, I'm sure, are that are closed up. We close up our barn.
Yeah, we, in the wintertime, as much as I dislike it, we do deep bedding. So it's always about 20 degrees warmer in the barn, if not. It gets really hard. It has to be really cold for it to get below 30 degrees. So it's probably once or twice in the winter where I have to break up ice in the buckets. But
see, we'll go for about a month or two of having to break up ice. But you know, by the time kidding season is coming, the other thing we'll do is, you know, we prefer to have the kids born in clusters. So it's not just one kid laying in that pen by itself. It's, you know, three or four other, and they keep each other warm. So we're holding out for the ones that were in heat this week. We'll hold out for the next heat cycle, and the ones that come into cycle the end of next week will breed, and that'll give us our late January heat cycle.
Yeah, I think we have a doe kid in heat today, and she's part Nubian, so she, for some reason, that part of her shines through when she's in heat, and she's out there right now screaming, and it's the Nubians, like, you, it sounds like I have a Nubian on my farm, and she's quite ridiculous right now. So, but we're waiting. We're going to be probably end of October, early November is when we'll breed our does. We're going to shoot for probably the second week of March and on. Last year we did a little bit earlier in March, and I try to set it where it's right when all of our sports seasons for Army end.
Okay.
So,
yep.
So last year, or this year, I should say, this kidding season, I kind of failed to remember that there's a chance that we're going to have playoffs. So I had four does kidding on the same day, and it was supposed to be the same day as playoffs for hockey. But I kind of lucked out with the whole, it was the only like bright part of COVID is that COVID caused the NCAA to cancel all of the playoffs for the hockey.
And
I lucked out and didn't have to work a game the same day that I had four does kidding. So it worked out.
Our issue was that last year, we started our normal breeding season in September. But then about midpoint, we realized we needed to supply some teaser does for the AI buck collection at Cornell University.
Mm-hmm.
So we seeded some does. We did the, Lou in the PG600 protocol, not necessarily in that order. And we had does who were teaser does for Cornell. Problem was it was near November, and by the time those does were back home, we tried to breed them because they're in heat. None of them took. It took another month. And then we had Leocadia coming in from Idaho. So we had some does that we wanted bred to him. So of those that were left over from Cornell. And what we ended up with was a kidding season that started in January and ended in June. And I would much rather have a kidding season January, February. By March, kidding season is done.
Yeah.
And we can move on.
Yeah, it's well, there's a lot of breeders that stretch it out like that. I mean, Brandy Giacchino, who we had, I just...
Giacchino.
That's funny. I just butchered her name.
Giacchino. Anyway. Sorry, Brandy. I'm correcting you.
So Brandy stretches hers out for a long time. I mean, she breeds a bunch more does than we do, but yeah, I don't know how they do it. Hats off to them, because I'd be exhausted.
She starts off, though, with her kidding season in December.
Yeah. I think last year it kicked off either right before Christmas or right after.
I think right before. What it does, though, is kind of our sideline topic today. It allows for her, though, to have a stream of kid goats available for sale. So she can look and go, yes, I want to keep this kid or this, this doe kid, this buck kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sell that one. And it's really, I'm finding it's easier to sell kids than it is to sell mature animals. Because many people, first off, it's the transport. Mm-hmm. We have two bucks here, Lux, and then, of course, Leocadio. And they both came from the same herd. They did come from Brandy's herd.
Right.
But Lux came to us in February as a buck kid. And it cost him, cost us about $500 to get him airlifted, put in a crate and sent to us.
Excuse me. Every podcast. Oh.
Yeah. But sent to us. And we picked him up the next day. He was, from the time he left Idaho until he got to us, was 24 hours or less than 24 hours. And so he missed a meal or two. And as soon as we picked him up, it was, 11:30 at night. We fed him, and he was happy, and he's grown beautifully. You saw yesterday. And
yeah.
And then there's Leocadio, and it cost about $500 to get him shipped from Idaho, but he came after Spotlight Sale, and so he was just pretty much, he was a senior kid when he came, yeah. And senior kid, juniorling size, and so he had to be put on a truck, and it took him 9 days to go from Idaho to here, and you know, it's kind of scary because for 9 days as breeders, we don't have our hands on the animal, and a lot can happen. But I think as far as selling kids, I would really much prefer to be able to, if I have to ship, put them in an air freight container and send them, then have to put them on a truck and as a larger animal and send them.
Plus, it can wear them out pretty quick, you know. Can. And that definitely happened with Leocadio, where it was a rough go. I mean, he went through a lot, even though he was at Brandy's after the Spotlight Sale for a little bit. But I mean, 9 days on the road.
Well, any animal, nine days on the road for any animal is going to be rough. I think of these herds that truck in to nationals. Brandy, when she was on, said that Harrisburg was 36 hours. Now, her situation, she's got, you know, Vanessa, who can help drive, you know, that distance. I think I remember she didn't necessarily come alone. You know, it wasn't just she and Vanessa. Well, it was, but they were able to, you can tag team driving while one's driving, the other one may be sleeping, which refreshes the driver for the next 4-6 hours. But I do think when it comes to selling kids, it's easier to move the kids as far as they haven't been on your property as long. And so, you know, people who are concerned about biohazards, biosecurity, are feel better about that. They're smaller, so you can put them in a crate and send them across country. Also, they're smaller, so you can put them in the back of the car and drive to the other end of the state or two or three states over to meet somebody.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to sell kids. And if you have a stream of kids going, you know, from December or January, February for a bit, it allows you to pick and choose and still be able to find good homes for these animals.
Right.
Periodically, though, you know, like what we've encountered yesterday, we had, you know, the doe you purchased, which honestly, she was one of our keepers. But you get to the point, and I guess we're kind of moving into our topic for the day of.
Yep, which is.
You can't keep them all.
Our topic for the. Yeah, you can't keep them all. Our topic for the day, there's not really any ad good news to speak on. The Castle Rock fundraiser is up to 52,000, I think I saw.
For the direct donation, yeah. And then the.
Yep. And then the buck pay or the, what is it? Bucks and Kids
Sale
Facebook page.
The one that Cindy Bright is putting together. I guess she is closing up in the next few hours donations. And then she had recruited somebody to help put together a sale catalog. And then the 31st of August, which will be tomorrow. She will start with the sale of either raffle tickets or auction style bidding. I think probably today she'll probably announce how that will go. So,
So I'll be looking at the catalog, seeing if there's anything interesting for our farm.
I will
buy a raffle ticket.
I will say that looking at it, if you're in the Nigerian dwarf breed. It is, it's a sale to watch. There are so many Nigerian dwarves, that, does and bucks and kids that have been put up. I know we put up some straws of semen out of our some of our over Hazlebucks, Rebel and King, which are actually out of Kiki Racket and Abby Ball herds.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other breeds that are represented. I think I saw some Alpine, some Nubian La Manchas that are available. I know Vanessa put up a kid, Vanessa Mills, Love Rock,
yeah,
put up a kid.
Yep.
And then someone said, someone put up a local person here in New York put up a night at a Airbnb in the Finger Lakes region.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are other some other non-animal things or things that are related just because the breeders have another sideline for that. So should be exciting to see. I think I'd be impressed to see what the numbers look like of what's being offered.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a fail, even if they're, you know, it's going to help a lot of people. So feel free to friend
yeah.
freely.
And that Facebook page is Bucks to Rebuild Kids to ADGA Dairy Goat Herds. That's the Facebook page. It's an online event, and you can go through and there's lots to look at here. I mean, the community definitely put some of their best on display here to try to help out with the fires out in California. So our topic today is going to be buying and culling for the good of the herd, or bad for the herd. I don't know who does it for the bad, but and this topic really came up because yesterday my wife Tierney and I took a trip up to Norwich, New York to purchase a lovely doe kid from Nate and his family. And with Emily not being available this morning, we decided what better topic to talk about than something that I just did and Nate was also part of. So, some reasons to call in your herd. There's lots of reasons to call. And as a small herd, usually for us, it's keeping numbers down, but also keeping the best. And buying is to bring in some new genetics, for me anyway. What do you think, Nate?
Well, so, and I think in saying calling, I want to clarify mm-hmm. that I'm not necessarily meaning that I'm calling and sending to the auction or getting the genetics like out of the gene pool. That may be one of them. Certainly, we had a few a week or two ago, a doling that we sent to the auction because there were issues with her that we didn't want spread out, and mm-hmm. and the way you get rid of that is you get it out of the gene pool,
right?
And then there's the culling of I have a specific trait I'm looking for in my herd, and
right.
And I, you know, maybe the doe or the bucks in question are not what I'm looking for. And then there's the third thing of this really is an animal that I would keep, as is the case with the doling you bought. But I have to count heads because, you know, I only have so much room in my barn, and to keep numbers down, you have to start going. And the way we do it, quite frankly, is we've gone through the process of saying, okay, first, if you could only keep, you know, five animals, who would it be?
Right.
And then my wife and I will discuss it, and we say, well, okay, what would be the next five animals you could keep if you could only keep five? And we look at it and we go, okay, you know, we've got our list of the 10 animals. For my wife and I, the children have their animals and we consider them protected. We don't count those in those numbers. we then look at it and go, well, you know, with Maria, my daughter, for 4-H animal, James, my son's 4-H animal.
Yeah, so you know, there's lots of reasons.
You get a number of what we want to winter over.
Right.
And so then we go, okay, well, these animals that were not on that list, what's going on with them? Why are they not the top five, the next five? And, you know, sometimes it's things like, we have a litter mate, you know. The doe you bought has a twin sister who's just as nice, you know. And we know you, from the day you saw that doe kid, you wanted her. So that was an easy one.
I called dibs right away.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was the case with another one that we sold to Western New York, where we had two doe kids we really wanted to keep, but we had two of them. And in that case, they were ones where we had to, like, really, like, look for little nuances in the body style. And, you know, one was ever so slightly wider at the hips than her litter mate sister. So, you know, that's where we made decisions there.
Right.
And, you know, those are where we, as far as the kids go, making cuts, you know. Otherwise, for us, it's mammary on the once they get to be milkers.
Yeah. This year, so we call or cut for different reasons. This year, we did a lot of culling. I mean, we got rid of 3 different does and a buck. 3 does and a buck. And the does that were in milk, it was either mammary. Actually, one had not a bad mammary. You know which one I'm talking about, Nia.
Yeah,
she was not bad at all. It was pretty much what you would want. Maybe a little bit too much milk, a little too much production for a first freshener, but she had a great mammary. The problem was she was hocky.
Yep.
And steep rumps because she was hocky. And that was really it. She had a great top line, great front end, nice feet and legs underneath her besides the hockiness. And it was just a decision that we decided we didn't want to have to try to improve those qualities in her. And honestly, her kids weren't that special. They were sold unregistered, and that they went down the road. So it was a... She didn't give me anything I wanted. She's not anything that is super special in my herd, so she's out. And that's, I'm very objective when it comes to my does, because I have to keep a tight herd. So I'm very nitpicky, and probably to a fault, as you know, Nate.
Right.
I'm very, very, very hard on my does and bucks. Luckily, I have some decent bucks where I don't have to be too hard on them, because they're not bad at all. The one buck we sold this year, I wasn't 100% sold on the kids he threw. I did end up keeping one of his daughters, but from the does that I used on him, it should have been a not a home run, but it should have been more obvious improvements than just the fine details. And I got a little anxious with him and didn't want to sit on him for another year, thinking maybe I won't get what I want. Am I going to breed my other buck's daughter to him and downgrade? So he went out.
Right.
And then another doe I sold, actually two does I sold, a dry yearling and a first freshener this year, was numbers. And the numbers were, I want to keep this kid, so I need to sell this doe. I want to buy this kid who's gorgeous from you, so I need to sell this doe. And they have faults. That's why they went. But it wasn't something that I couldn't have lived without. It was just, I know that what I'll be bringing into my herd will be a better line to start from. So that's where my thinking is when it comes to calling and buying, if I'm buying something, it better improve my herd greatly. I'm not going to just buy something off the street, you know, that's same quality or lesser than what I already have. The goal is to improve the herd with every purchase and every sell.
Right. So
that's where I'm at when it comes to culling and buying. And it's not necessarily I'm selling. I have never sold anything for meat or livestock auction because I haven't needed to, because there's a nice market for pet quality goats around here that people just snag them up.
See, now up here,
I'm very lucky with that.
I would say now up here, we don't, we have that, but to a lesser degree. But we're in a farming community. Really, you can go any place and people will buy a quality goat. But they want to pay $20 for the pet quality goat.
It's, well, with any farming community, you're going to see that, where if you have a huge rural area that has lots of farms, people are either all about cattle or what have you, and they're not really thinking goat, because let's face it, goat's kind of on the low end of the totem pole in farming communities.
Right.
Where in my area, I'm towards the city, there's a lot of novelty farms, hobby farms, of people just starting out. You know, goats are getting very popular with that kind of crowd. And I'm lucky where I'm smack dab in the middle of people from the city that have country homes that want to have that fun little goat. So I'm able to market it towards them. And I've been really lucky the first 3 years of selling goats that way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you listening to different breeders, how they, what they're able to do to get rid of their animals, as far as like whether they have pet quality market, or whether they have auctions, or whether, you know, back when my family, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, we had the animals. Quite frankly, we had ethnic groups who wanted goat meat. And there was a number of times that, you know, animals got sold for meat. But usually those were the animals that you wanted out of the gene pool. They were the animals who were not show quality, who may have had, you know, issues that would have caused the animal discomfort to live, you know, 2-3 more years longer. But that was back then. So it is something to consider.
Right. Yeah, and honestly, there's days where when I'm selling goats that I'd much rather deal with a meat buyer or livestock auction, because when you're selling to pet homes, there's a lot to it. A lot of times there's people that don't know much or anything at all, and I don't mind mentoring people at all. I don't, because I'd rather give them the information that I feel is right than to just tell them, well, good luck, you know, hopefully you don't kill the goat. So but there's days where I'd rather, much rather, go to a livestock auction if I had to. It's just kind of the way it is. And then, you know, there's the aspects of your calling for various reasons of why you don't want the animal in the herd. But then there's buying, which as a new breeder, I've done a lot of buying in the last 3 years. You know, I started off, I don't know if I've ever really explained it on the podcast. I started off with a pet quality doe and a wether and quickly fell in love. So then we bought 3 bred does, and my eye wasn't super sharp back then. Luckily it was sharp enough where I knew that they weren't terrible animals that I bought, and they're actually quite lovely for the price that I got them for. I mean, I got 3 bred does for $300 to start out with. That's a huge investment that didn't break the bank. And they had great pedigrees behind them. You know, they had enough to keep us competitive. And then we invested in a buck at, you know, 2 years down the road, and then now another one. And we spent a lot of money to start out with, where now I can kind of focus on what we're doing, you know, without right. having to purchase another animal. We've got some decent animals in our herd. I think the next purchase that we're going to do is a Nigerian buck, just because we sold ours this year. So, and again, he was a numbers thing. We're not breeding with Nigerians this year, so we sold him. So that'll be the next and final purchase next spring for a while, until we need to get another Nigerian buck. We'll probably end up having to have two in the next couple years, but it's when you're buying animals, you have to figure out what your limit is, what you want to spend. Top dollar, bottom dollar, doesn't matter. What's your goal? And then don't jump at the first thing you see. Take your time, figure out what you like, and go for it.
Well, and I think that's kind of what a lot of the younger breeders, really, the newer breeders, mm-hmm. have questions on, is how do you know what to look for? I know there are a number of people who they'll watch the shows, and, you know, John Doe over there, he wins with his shows all the time. I'll just get a buck from him. He seems to be doing something right.
Right.
And I get the buck, you know, I get the buck from John Doe over there. I breed that buck to my doe. I may get some nice kids out of him, but am I getting the best kids out of him?
Right.
That's the big question. And I've started getting to the point when people say, hey, what do you think about this buck I'm thinking about buying? My next question is, what are you hoping for him to improve?
Right. Exactly.
Because if you're just getting him because he's a really nice buck out of a really nice herd, and he went grand champion at this buck show, well, that's nice. But if his strengths are your doe's strengths, and his weaknesses are the weaknesses your does have, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to move you forward. He may maintain your quality, but I don't think so.
Yeah, and they can also hurt your quality.
Yes.
You know, I bought a buck 2 years, or last year I bought him, last spring.
We won't say from where. Kid.
No, as a kid. And on paper, he was everything. But he hurt some different aspects of my goats, and it wasn't worth him keeping him. It just, the quality I got, there was plenty of great qualities from this buck. Plenty. For a lot of people, they probably would have kept him just because of those qualities. But I'm very picky. Pedigree. Right. Well, the kids weren't bad. They weren't terrible at all. They had great qualities. It's just the one thing that I didn't like on that buck, he threw on his kids.
Right.
And I didn't want that. I had the does. What I didn't like on him, they should have fixed, and I thought they were going to. That's why I used him. And they didn't. So he went down the road. But for buying, just because John Doe is winning with this doe and that doe and this doe and that buck and whoever, doesn't mean that their whole herd's that way. You have to assess your animals before you go to buy what needs to be fixed. Put down, make a list. That's what I do. Make a list of what you don't like about your animals. Figure out what correlates. And then look for a buck that can fix that.
I tend to be a numbers person.
Right.
And this is where I believe linear appraisal comes in.
Right.
And what I like to do, I love my spreadsheet, and, you know, I can bore people to death with my spreadsheet.
There's that rooster again.
I think he slept in though.
he got scared because of the gunshot, so now he's brave enough to go ahead and pop off.
But this is where I think linear appraisal comes in. And what I tend to do is I take all my linear appraisal scores for every doe that was appraised, and I put them in a spreadsheet with the whole herd, and I calculate what the average score was for the herd. Now, that means that some does are going to, you know, bring the score up in an area. Some does are going to bring it down.
But this it'll average it, though. And
it'll give me an index.
Do that for mammary and all of that? For every single category?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the ones where there's numbers. I don't do, like, the broad things.
You don't do the E's and the V's and all that.
Right,
that
would just no.
Be...
No.
Right.
But for the numerical portion.
Right.
And what it does is it gives me an index, and I can look at it, and then I can, I compare it to the national average. And personally, I also have calculated the past 5 years national show champion average scores. And I compare those, and I look where my, first I look at my where my herd is compared to those numbers. And what it shows me is, well, nationally, as a breed, this they're weak here. My animals are, you know, rank about here, plus or minus.
Right.
And then I can look at the national champions and compare it to that. And I see, oh, I need to work on four rudder. You know, I need a buck that's going to work on four rudder. You know, and strength, you know, with, okay, so I need to find a buck whose dam and or sire have these traits that I'm looking for, and then I'm able to, you know, compare it to type evaluation numbers and on the buck and on the does, and find where I can find a buck that's going to improve those things. And actually, that was what was the underlying thing on bringing in Lux and Leocadio, was there were weaknesses I saw in our herd that the dams and the sires of those two bucks covered.
On paper.
Okay.
Now your juniors, your kids from this year from both bucks are gorgeous.
But the night and day.
Until, yeah, they are night and day. Well, they're two different dam lines and sire lines. So you're going to have the difference between them, and they're very different bucks. And that, but now you got to wait and see how they freshen to see if that forerunner was fixed and all that, which is part of the excitement.
It is.
But there's also the fact, you know, you can crunch all those numbers all day. There was no linear appraisal this year. At some point, not saying you, Nate, I know you've developed your eye very well. You have a great eye. But for a newer person that hasn't linear appraised their animals, like myself, I haven't linear appraised ever. I was hoping to this year, and it just didn't work out because of COVID. But you have to develop your eye on your animals, really nitpick them, and figure out what should fix them from a different buck. Now, also, when you're looking to purchase an animal from a different breeder, you want to really, in my opinion, you really want somebody to buy from somebody that has consistency, right? Because you can say, oh, well, they have this doe and this doe and this doe that are nice. What about the other 12 that are sitting in their barn?
Right.
What are they doing? How do they look? Are they as consistent? Some cases there's not. I know some large breeders, and I see animals with their farm name on them. I'm not impressed at all. I see very big flaws in some of them. And that's just, you need to find the consistency Look at the whole herd. When you go on their website or Facebook page, look at all their pictures. Look at every single animal they're churning out. See if there's some major flaws that are keep popping up. Maybe it's not a good idea.
Well, the other thing we'll do is, digital age, we delve into AdGenetics website. And when you look at, X breeder, I'm agreeing with you here, by the way, but you look at X breeder, and X breeder has, in the past 5 years, registered 100 kid goats, but two of them have finished, or two of them are in the SG, or so there's that to consider. But at the same time, one of our best does that we purchased from Thin Mint, I will throw this warning up, though. You can't just use whether or not they won in the show ring, because I will tell you that the herd that Thin Mint came from hadn't shown in like 5 years.
Right.
And so they had no champion at the time that we bought her. And it appeared that Thin Mint was their first champion, their first permanent champion.
Right.
But like within a year, because they had started showing about the same time we did, but they'd been breeding for years. Within a year, their barn was just full of them.
Yeah.
Full of champions and SGs and SGCHs. So just looking at a herd and going, oh, they don't have very many champions. The thing to do, and this is real, yes, you do need to develop an eye. And it's where you sit at ringside of a show and you listen to what the judges say. You look at what the judges are pointing out. And it also, if you do get a chance to go to a linear appraisal, even if you don't take your animal, see if you can go and listen to the appraisers. And then when you look in your barn and you go, well, I really wish my doe had a leveler top line or a straighter set of feet and legs, you can then go and find the buck or the does who have those traits and look for them. And I also say, if you're buying a doe, this is my opinion, if you're buying a doe to add to your herd, don't buy one that's like everything else in your barn.
Right. And that's why yesterday my wife and I went to your farm, picked out Mary Mac, who is totally different. I'd say probably the closest animal I have in my barn to her would be my Orion daughter Paige, my Hay Creek Buck's daughter. Just kind of a very similar length and bone pattern and dairiness to them.
It's Hay Creek on both of them. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the mammary is going to be different on Mary Mac than Paige. It's just going to. I know it's going to. I'm actually really crossing my fingers on my Orion daughter to hope that she got her mammary from her sire, not her dam. But when you're bringing an animal in, if you have a certain style that you want to keep, by all means, bring in an animal that is an improvement, but is still within the style that you want. If you want to really improve, in my opinion, I'm new, so what do I know? But bring in something that's got numbers behind it, pedigree behind it, to back up the way that animal looks as a junior. If you're buying a senior, you've won. You know exactly what they look like in milk. You can pick that animal apart, and if that's something you want in your herd, if that's a mammary you want, if that's a buck you want, great, do it. The nice thing is with bucks, you can buy a great senior buck. People are keeping bucks on their property for 3, maybe 4 years, and that's really for the average. That's about it. So you can get a good late stage buck. You know what the daughters look like, and you won. You know what to expect. Hopefully.
For example, probably, you know, the most recent well-known box, you know, two of this, you know, ex-Solution, you know, Morgan Allen had him, and he'd been, you know, premier sire at National Show. He had literally hundreds of dollars on the ground. He was one of the most well-known bucks, and she was, it sounds terrible, she was done with him. Everything in her herd was related to him.
Yep.
It was time to move him on. We had a similar situation with the two bucks that we've sold in the past as breeders, where we had used them, and everything in the barn was pretty much related. And
yeah,
they were senior bucks at that point. We, you know, mind you, we collected them and put them in the tank, but right. Then they were available for somebody else to breed and use. And yeah, I agree. I think the one thing that, and with 10 minutes from the end of the podcast here, mm-hmm. is that you've got to like what you're bringing in too. Don't buy that buck kid or that doe kid and be like, yes, the pedigree is there. Oh, her, you know, this buck kid's dam is the star milker. She's a permanent champion. You know, he may have all of that on the paper, as you remember with that other buck that you ended up selling.
Yeah.
It may all be on the paper, but you can't, but paper doesn't get you good offspring.
Yeah. I mean, if sometimes the complete sometimes the complete outcross just doesn't work. Genetics sometimes don't mix, and if it's good on paper doesn't mean it's going to be good for your herd.
Well, and there may be things that you don't know about, or that the breeder who's selling the animal to you don't know about, that just they manifest themselves mm-hmm. because this trait in your doe and the trait in the buck line up and click, and suddenly, you know, maybe it's a you know, they both had a great great grandsire who was similar, and he had bad pasture.
Right.
And now for some reason, even though the dam and the sire have gorgeous feet and legs, you've got a slew of kids with bad pasture.
Yeah, definitely delve into those pedigrees and find pictures if you can of what as many of the animals in the pedigree as you can. Try to find pictures of and see how they looked. I do that all the time. One of my tricks is going on Facebook, searching for the name of the goat. Sometimes it turns out with a picture from a post. Sometimes it doesn't. Or you go on the website of the breeder or whoever had owned him and try to, or her, and try to find them that way. Definitely, that's like a big thing. People always ask, not a ton of people, but I've been asked before, how are you finding all these pictures? I just do a Facebook search. People post beautiful animals and animals they think are okay, you know, and they're pretty easy to find if you just search for the name.
Well, and sometimes you have to, though, get really creative. You know, there's the Facebook group, Goat Corral, which is basically historical photos of certain notable dairy goats. Sometimes you just have to go through, you know, photo by photo until you find them. My wife has found pictures of animals in the 80s and 90s mm-hmm. of purebred Oberhasli, where there aren't pictures of them on Facebook, except there's these old dairy goat journal clippings that have been photographed.
Yeah.
So, the end of the day, you got to like what's in the barn.
Right.
If you buy this really awesome buck, and I know I've done it, where, you know, he was kind of funky, but on paper, he was a million, he should have been a million bucks. He should have been a total, you know, just awesome buck for your herd.
Yeah, home run.
A home run. And A, you don't like the look of him, and B, his offspring you don't like either.
Right.
Yeah. That's one of those. Clean them out of your herd. Get them, you know. You've got to like what you're breeding.
Yeah. If you don't like what you're breeding, why are you doing it?
Exactly. Yeah. I think when you talk to many of these breeders out here, you know, who are showing is they've got to they like what they're breeding. And, you know, honestly, I was at a show and we didn't do as well as we thought we were going to. But I felt I was pleased with how my does looked. And it sounds funny, but I didn't care how we did. I liked how they looked. And at the end of the day, I was happy.
Right.
I didn't come back with a rosette, but I was happy.
Yeah, it's first of all, I really try not to judge it on one show because it's anybody's opinion on that given day, as every breeder knows. You know, it's if you don't show, though, you really have to develop your eye. And that's really the moral of the story with this topic, is if you're culling, develop your eye. What do you want? Make a list of what you want and from your animals that you have. And if you have animals that aren't meeting that and you want to keep your numbers manageable or you want to bring something in and you want to get rid of a few, make that list, look at the list, and be objective about it. Don't be subjective about it. And that is the same thing for buying. Make a list, take a look, really delve into what you're thinking about purchasing. If you want to buy something because of what's on paper, fine. We've all done it. But if you really want to improve your herd and get yourself to that next level, that's anybody that's showing or be, you know, LAing and DHI, you know, anything, really take a look of what you want from that animal and doesn't make sense for your herd. If it makes sense, pull the trigger. Stay within the budget you want to stay in. By all means, do not try to knock down the price to half or anything like that. Please do not. I see that all the time. Don't be rude.
But <You know>? See, I'm going to make this being my final point, and kind of related to what you're saying right now, is, but also don't be afraid to ask those breeders that have the traits that you want to improve in your herd about the purchase of a buck or a doe. Because you know what we found when we first got started back into goats again was that we could buy a really nice quality doe or buck for the same price as was being asked for a lesser quality doe or buck.
Yes.
So you just got to be willing to find the animal that's going to do what you want it to do, that you're happy, that you can wake up every morning, go out in the barn and look at, and it's not going to break your bank.
Yeah.
And if it's going to break a bank, make sure you have a plan for recouping your cost.
Yep. Those genetics in your herd can help you and also can help you with your pricing and marketability to get rid of animals when you want to do that down the road. You know, when you're looking out your window or if you're by your barn and you're watching your animals, you should be happy with what you're seeing. And if that's your goal, if you want goats for pets, more power to you. I love it because I love my goats. But right now I'm looking out my big picture window and I see my new doe running around acting like a kid with my other kids. She looks gorgeous. My kids look gorgeous. And I can only beam in excitement with what we've done with these purchases and culls. So it's a fine line. It's a balancing act when it comes to doing both. And it can pay off. It can also go south. But the payoff, if you do it right, I mean, I'm smiling from ear to ear right now looking out my window. So you tell me.
And I think that's where we all need to be.
Yes, exactly. So that should wrap everything up, right, Nate? Did you have anything to add?
No, other than get a chance, go out and enjoy those animals.
Yes, go enjoy your animals.
Look at them. Have fun with them. love on them. Make sure you're happy with them.
Exactly. It's getting cooler out, so enjoy the nice cool weather with your animals and just enjoy farming. That's what it's all about. Now I did get a message, Nate, during the podcast from Emily, who was super apologetic because she slept in. Like I said, she showed yesterday. I'm not sure if she brought any ribbons home or not. I'll have to ask her. But she was super apologetic, slept in on accident, and that's perfectly fine. We hope she had a great day yesterday. No hurt feelings over here. It's not like we got stood up on a date or anything. And with that, we're going to end the podcast. Y'all have a great day. It's been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. We'll talk to you later.
Later.